Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast, episode 49. I am Kevin. Joined with me, as always, my podcast host, co-host, Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
Doing pretty good. Went to the game last night. Pretty crazy, Kevin.
Just want to interrupt you real fast. Did you know that KU won a share of the Big 12 title last night?
Really?
Yeah. That was like the big thing that people were talking about.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them. It was a crazy game last night, and it's kind of one of those ones where, you know, you'd like to see a blowout, but because it was so close in the second half, the fans stayed in it the entire time. So it was kind of building and building until the end when the game was won and finally everyone could party and celebrate rather than kick back like at the Texas game. I liked it. It was a good time last night.
Yeah, I bet. So we're at episode 49. Do you have anything for us for what the number 49 signifies in KU lore?
49's tough, but yeah. I did it. Okay, so 49 was the overall pick that Josh Selby was selected in the NBA draft in 2011. So Josh Selby was taken with the 49th pick.
All right.
Didn't work out in the NBA. He started with Memphis and then kind of moved around.
Haven't worked out yet.
So I thought that I'd take this little tiny segment to update you on what Josh Selby's doing. He played in China for a while. And you know, on January 7th, this is according to Wikipedia, he signed with Cedevita Zagreb. This is a European team, obviously, and that's in Croatia. But he left the team on February 5th, a month later. So I'm trying to get him caught up on what happened in the past month. So I'm just going to read you a couple of tweets from Josh Selby.
Okay.
At Josh Selby 32 on Twitter. Some important things. He's just given some good nuggets out here. Late night work, hashtag back to the basics. Okay. That's a picture of his feet at the gym. Gym flow, hashtag back to the basics. That's probably kind of it. LeBron, hashtag turn up. This is what Josh Selby's been doing. So that's your little 49 tidbit for today. But let's
get him on the podcast, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, then we'll find out what he's been up to.
That's right.
All right. Well, there you go. So let's talk about what we're going to talk about on this show. A little rundown. We're going to talk about Texas a little bit because that was a fun game. You got to bring that up. We're going to talk about OU clinching the Big 12 title, at least a share of it so far. We're going to talk about bench parties because that little celebration after the Tariq dunk or throwdown or whatever you want to call it was too much fun. Definitely got to talk about that. We're going to do some go-go power rankings, and we're going to preview Okie State. We will also do a little chatter about some March Madness. Just a few little nuggets talking about maybe the potential for KU still getting a one seed. But let's start with Texas, Andrew. You were at the game. You mentioned it was kind of a yawner after the first little bit there, at least not a yawner, but you know, not interesting anymore. It was just a crazy blowout and all kinds of fun. So tell me a little bit about the game itself.
Well, it was a lot of anticipation going in, a lot of nerves. The Texas team is a pretty good team.
Yeah.
Really strong inside. And, you know, we've really got to, if we're going to be successful this season, got to show that we can do well against size. But, you know, it was kind of a laugher. You know, in the first half, we were up 46-18. By the time it was over, just coasted in the second half and really could. The Wiggins didn't play past the 8-minute mark, and Bede didn't play past the 12-minute mark. Really quite fun. But I think that, like, the game changed around with Andrew Wiggins in the first half. He had his first set of points around the 14-minute mark with a three. And then he just went on a tear where he scored a three, had some free throws, a couple dunks, a three, and ended up with 15 points in about 6 minutes,
wow.
Which in that stretch, he kind of showed that, you know, when he can do it, he's the best player in college basketball, you know, because in that stretch, we put it out of reach. They didn't score for about 10 minutes, and they only had a couple free throws down the stretch. So, I mean, that's when you get 46 to 18. That's the recipe for that.
It was a 43-10 run to end the half. During that 43-10 run, here's a few things that happened. Texas went 8 minutes without scoring a basket, missing 23 of 29 field goal attempts. The Jayhawks out-rebounded them 29-21 during that stretch, which is crazy. Let's see. Joel Embiid had 5 block shots and 6 rebounds during that stretch.
And they were fun block shots, too.
Yeah.
They were fun.
So, I mean, that was, yeah, like you said, it was over after that. And tons of fun to watch. Basically, I think every KU fan kind of needed it. You know, it's kind of one of those, like, yes, we are back to where where we want to be.
And I think Bill Self was right. Like, this game really wasn't about the Big 12 or trying to win the Big 12. It was about beating Texas. It had nothing to do with the conference race. It had to do with getting our... Yeah, as Seth Davis would say, our mojo back to beat this Texas team. But let's just close this out. Last week, I talked about the redemption roadmap that we would need to accomplish to beat Texas. Let's just go over a couple things. I said we had to play strong in the paint. We out-rebounded Texas, a very strong rebounding team, interior team, 39-37. They blocked 12 of our shots last game. That didn't happen. We had the edge in blocks. We were the bullies inside, which was good to see against a good team like that. Cameron Ridley really wasn't a factor at all in the first half. Tarik really stepped up from the bench. Other than that, Nadir didn't play great, and we thought that he would need to. But Isaiah Taylor for Texas didn't play great either. He only had 5 points compared to his phenomenal game down in Austin. So other than that, you know, that's the redemption roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
Glad we got it.
Yeah, that was.
Wouldn't mind seeing them again in the Big 12 tournament.
I wouldn't mind it either. I think that it was a perfect storm for them to beat us down there. I actually think we sort of match up okay with them. I'm not sure I buy the argument that KU struggles against big interior players. I mean, we obviously saw it against San Diego State and Florida and Texas as 3 of our losses, and those guys obviously have some length, but. I don't know. I think we're getting better at it. And I think that will happen throughout the year. Once you see those things early on, you play a tough schedule, you expose some of your weaknesses, and then you can fix them. And obviously KU didn't have any problem against Texas this time. The one stat that jumped out to me the most in that Texas game, though, other than the final score being a 31-point game, we had fast break points 26-0 against Texas.
Wow. Isn't that crazy? Really? That hasn't come a lot this year. We thought it would. We thought it'd be a big part of the offense, but
26-0.
If that can be a trend, if that can keep going, this offense is going to get even better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you say we move on to the Oklahoma game?
Yes. This is the clincher. This is what set it. This gets us the 10 in a row, and what a great way to do it. It was a fun game last night.
I agree. So, do you want to talk about the 10 in a row thing first? Or do you want to get into the game?
Let's just talk about a couple 10 in a row things, because it was kind of a cool little thing to happen. They didn't celebrate with the trophy, but they did do a little Jarence Howard dance in the locker room. So take a look at that if you haven't seen that online. A lot of hashtags going around, Kevin.
Yes.
Celebrating this. What's your favorite hashtag?
There were several. I think the champions with the 10... And the I and the O, I think that one's pretty good.
That one's pretty good. I would buy a t-shirt that just said that.
Yeah.
Like maybe a blue shirt with white letters with red, the 1 and 0. If it didn't even say like KU, it just said champions. Like you just know.
You know.
You just know.
Yeah, I like that idea. We should do that. Maybe we'll make like at least tens of dollars on that if we make.
Oh,
that.
Yeah. Probably dozens of dollars.
At least dozens. Yeah, no, I think that one's the best. Although I did see, it was kind of funny, I think I tweeted it, a picture of the things trending in Kansas City. and it was basically 10 variations of the...
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's so many different variations of a 10 straight.
10 straight, hashtag 10 straight 10.
Back to back.
Yeah.
They were all funny. They were all good.
Yeah. And they were all trending. So it was a little bit for everybody, apparently. Which one was your favorite? Was it the Champions?
I think that's the best one.
Yeah. Did you see, Andrew, that somebody put the t-shirt next to the K-State t-shirt? Mm-hmm. Someone did one of those like little meme things where you like put it in half and you show the K-State t-shirt that we talked about a few podcasts ago, where they made one after beating us and then we made a t-shirt after winning 10 straight Big 12 titles. I don't know, which t-shirt do you think makes the most sense?
I liked the t-shirt that had the ring as the zero. So it said 1-0, but it had the big 12 championship ring.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
That's a good one. I might go get that one. Yeah. I haven't bought a conference championship t-shirt since we were 5 in a row. So maybe
every 5 years.
That's maybe every 5 years I have to go get one.
Good thinking. That makes sense. Well, hopefully you get one here, and maybe at 15 we'll be on podcast episode like 200, and maybe you can go get that.
Deal.
Maybe 250. We'll have to come up with weird numbers if we get over 100.
Maybe we'll just do it by, I don't know.
Yeah,
just
know.
Title them like TV episodes.
There you go.
The one where Kevin fell down at the end. Or the one where, you know.
Right. Always
maybe
sunny.
We should start doing that anyway.
Always
let's
sunny
talk about
titles.
The game. Yeah.
I'm with you.
The gang gets in trouble. The gang sets their computers on fire.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the game. The actual game.
Which, I mean, the celebration is more fun than the game, but...
Agreed. But the game was intriguing because it, we got off to a big lead early, or at least a nice lead, playing really well out of the gate. And then for about a 10-minute stretch in that first half, we stopped scoring and sort of stopped defending, too. It wasn't very pretty getting back on defense. We were settling for 17-foot jumpers, almost seemed like every time down the court. Wiggins was settling, which is something that he has not been doing recently. He's been very aggressive, taking the ball to the hole, getting fouled. And he did that during this game some, but in that stretch he did not. And it was clear that for whatever reason, our offense kind of sputtered there. They came back, took the lead, ended up being a close game going into halftime. What was the crowd like during that stretch? You know, did everyone kind of feel like at the after the 10 minute mark, oh man, we got this again, or once after that stretch came along, what was the crowd reaction?
There was some anxiety. I mean, especially when we were down in the second half, I think we got down between 4 and 6 and not for very long, but there was some anxiety, you know, like, oh, maybe this isn't the game, but that quickly turned around. And I think once, the 8 minute mark hit when everyone's, you know, turned it into another gear, everybody was feeling fine. I mean, and it got pretty loud. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the best things about that game last night is that it got louder and louder throughout the night. And then, you know, it kind of crescendoed. It kind of peaked at the end when we realized we were going to win and get that 10th straight title. So it was a building thing. You know, it built up to that final celebration, which was a lot of fun because it got pretty loud and people were
nice
cheering and dancing and the whole deal.
Nice. Yeah. Well, so let's talk some stats. Or I don't know. Do you want to talk about the storylines first? Maybe you should do that. So like the player that really stood out to me and I was pretty hard on at one point in the game was Nadir. But the last 10 minutes of the game, he was incredible. I mean, he really took over the game, played really well on offense, made plays when really not much else was going on. What did you think of the way that Nadir closed the game?
You know, I think it's fair of you to criticize him early because I think he was in foul trouble in the first half, didn't play all that well. Beginning of the second half, didn't play all that well either. You know, it just came at the end in the last 6 or 7 minutes. He scored 12 of his 19 and just took control of the game.
Yeah.
You know, some of those, I believe one of them where he drove into the lane and kind of stopped. Everybody went up, and he got that easy shot. I think that was a design play out of a timeout for him, and it worked out really well. But he shot the free throws down the stretch. He was the one in control of the whole thing, and I think that's what you need from your point guard in a close game like that. Because if he doesn't play like that at the end, I'm not sure this game ends up this way. So, I mean, he was the closer. He was the guy we needed at the end.
Yeah, and that's what you want to see. Like you said, good to see that he can still do it. He's been sputtering recently. We definitely want him to be the game manager and leader, or whatever you want to call him, that you want from your point guard. Hopefully this is another building block for him. Let's talk about some stats on the free throw line being a big one. 26 for 30. That's pretty good. We need to shoot 30 free throws every game, first of all. But if you can make 26 of them, this team's going to be really hard to beat.
You know, I remember all the misses. You know, I see that stat and think, how did we make 26 out of 30? But I can tell you all the misses. And like, why didn't you make that shot? I mean, maybe that's just the life of a KU fan, remembering the losses
right
more than the wins. But yeah, 26 for 30, that's you know, you're going to win a lot of games doing that.
And then obviously the rebounding edge was huge, 40 to 29. And, you know, they've got a pretty decent rebounding team.
Spangler
is the man on the rebounds. And really, he wasn't a big factor at all during the game. So that was really good to see. That was probably maybe the most important stat of the game. Let's talk some KU player stats. All five starters ended up in double figures. Nadir had 19, as you mentioned, had 5 assists. I think just 1 turnover. Wiggins, 15 and 5. Embiid really filled out the stat sheet. 12 points, 13 boards, 3 assists, 4 blocks, 4 steals, 3 blocks. So a very nice game for him. Who is your player of the game?
Here's the 3. I'm telling you, he's in a zone right now.
I think you can put a blindfold on him.
Nadir, Wiggins, Embiid, who you got?
I'm going with Nadir. If you would ask me who's the player of the game at the 10-minute mark in the second half, he's probably my not player of the game. But he closed it out, played really well down the stretch, really won the game for us. Have to go with Nadir. What about you?
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, especially, I was really, I tweeted something out that was kind of, I don't remember what I said, but I'm always pretty tough on him. I'm always tough on all the point guards, but especially tough on Nadir and got some flack because the second I tweeted it, he made a 3 and then went down and made like 3 straight baskets or something. I was like, I guess I should tweet it out all the time because next thing you know, he's doing awesome, making me look stupid. But I was happy to look stupid because he, like you said, was a big part of that win. Let's talk about the WTF of the game. All right, who you got on the WTF?
I think you could very well give it to 75% of the game that Nadir played. Like, you could very well do that and get away with it.
That's fair.
But I'm not going to do that. I'm probably going to say Connor Frankamp played 5 minutes, had 3 fouls, looked behind on defense every play down the floor.
Not his best game.
Not his best game.
I'm kind of with you there. Yeah. You know... We spent a good 3 minutes talking about how we thought his defense was coming around. I still think that his defense is fine. It wasn't a face guarding problem during that game. He was just out of position. He's going under screens and just anyway, he didn't look very good. It was not a great game for Connor. Hopefully he can bounce back. I think that probably the most important question of this game is who was the floor burns player of the game?
You can't hope or wish good things to happen. You go make them happen because we are in attack mode for the entire 40 minutes. We do that, and we're going to have a fun locker room in about 2.5 hours.
All right, who you got?
I'm going to go with Joel Embiid. Really filled out the stat chart. You know, had 12 points, 13 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. 4 steals? He's getting out and getting some of these passes that are thrown into the interior. And mostly because, and they've shown this play a couple times on ESPN SportsCenter, is that threw the ball into him in the post. Actually, maybe he was off a miss. But anyway, he's basically 5-on-1. There's basically, I don't even know what the word is. Quintuple? Is that 5?
Sure.
Quad, whatever. There's 5-on-1, and he goes up and makes it. So just for that, I think he wins the four burns. You know, he's got to have some muscle, got to be bigger than everybody else, got to want it more. That's Moxie. That's floor burns.
All right.
That's what I think. What do you think?
I'll buy that. I think I'm going to change it up, though. I want to go with someone who maybe didn't get the all the praise that maybe Embiid got from this game, obviously being on SportsCenter. So I'm going to give it to Jamari Traylor, who came in, played like, oh, I don't know what, 12, 13 minutes. Maybe not even that. But that 13 minutes, made 2 for 2 from the field, and both of those buckets were huge. I don't know if you remember, he made that little jumper, and then he did that nice little drive to the basket way from, you know, all the way out from the three-point line. 4 rebounds and 4 points in 13 minutes. He just kind of came in and did his job like he's been doing, bringing some energy, and he is my floor burns player of the game.
You know, if we're not careful, we're going to have to rename this award the Jamari Traylor Award, because he seems to win it every week.
Well, Wayne's got it a bunch, too.
Oh, Wayne Selden's got it a bunch, too. Okay. That's
so
true.
The Jamari win, the Wayne-ari.
Don't even try. Nope. Nope.
Does that work?
No. I will make one comment. Since we're talking about floor burns and aggressiveness, I think Perry's been, just to go back, this is out of nowhere, talking about Perry Ellis. Perry's been sort of aggressive, and you'd always like to see him more. But this is where I just wanted to get this thought in here somewhere. I think Perry Ellis needs to join a fight club. This is what I mean. Like, during the offseason sometime, I hope he gets onto a plane and he sits next to a guy. He looks over and this guy's really rugged. He's like, yeah, hey, my name's Perry Ellis. And then the guy doesn't really tell him his name. And something happens to Perry's apartment and he has to go live with this guy. And then they just start fighting each other. And they meet in basements and they just beat the hell out of each other. And so when he comes back for the summer, for summer practices, he's, you know, maybe got black eyes and like no one's going to mess with him.
It's true.
And he's got this, that's what I think needs to happen. Over the summer, Perry's workout is joining a fight club.
I like that idea. I feel like I've seen that in a movie or something. Maybe not.
I don't know. I just came up with this.
It should be. I think you should do something with that idea. It sounds like a really good movie.
No, it just needs to really happen. Oh. I don't care about the movie.
Well, we'll see. I like the idea.
Anyway,
I agree.
Perry's already a great player, but this would make him, I don't know what it would make him. I don't even want to think about it.
I do agree that he's getting more aggressive. He's playing better. He still goes up and kind of fades away and does that old garbage, but he's getting better. I would agree. And he's getting more rebounds and I don't know. He's playing better. He was kind of disappearing there for a long time in the middle of the season, but we're going to need him to be good. So what do you say we take a look around the Big 12?
Y'all ready for this? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
How about playing a little defense? You ever heard of that one, Stan?
BCS. Dollar signs.
All right, Andrew. Standings. KU, 13-2. Tied for second. Texas and Iowa State all the way down there at 9-5. OU and K-State, 9-6. West Virginia, 7-7. Baylor, 6-8. Baylor, by the way, quietly reeling off, what, 4 wins in a row now?
That's right.
6-8. So creeping out of the basement with a big game against Texas coming up. OSU 6-9, Texas Tech 5-10, and TCU still winless at 0-15. What do you say we talk a little power rankings? And to do this, do you think we ought to? What do you want to do? Do you want to do the Big 12 power rankings first? Or do we care about that?
Let's just do it real quick. I think it conforms mostly to the standing.
I'm not doing the drop right now, by the way. We're going to save the drop.
No, I know everybody's waiting for it. Everybody's waiting for it. Just give me, who do you think is going to finish second?
I think you're right. I think it is Iowa State.
And just give me your 1 through 4, how you think they'll finish.
I can't remember the records, but or who everybody has left, but I'll take Iowa State, Texas, OU, K-State.
Okay.
What do you got?
I agree with that.
Okay. Good talk.
All right. Let's get this next segment, I think, is going to be one of those ones that moves the dials, you know, one of those ones that gets people riled up, gets some discussion going. So I think we need to bring in a third party here.
Okay. Let's pause for a minute, and we will be right back.
No one could ever take them down. The power lies on their side. Go, go, Power Rangers! Go, go, Power Rangers! Go, go, Power Rangers! The mighty Jayhawk Power Rangers!
All right, we are back, and we are joined by KU beat writer of the Kansas City Star, Mr. Rustin Dodd, making his third appearance on the podcast. Rustin, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Hey, Kevin, what's going on? Is this the third? I was almost thinking it was the fourth.
Oh, shit. Is it the fourth?
It may be the fourth.
God, I'm sorry, Rustin.
I think it might just be the third, though. I just might be getting ahead of myself.
So there's the Jayhawk Talk historians out there. If you could just let us know, if you could go back through the archives, through the historical museum documents, and let us know.
I remember last time we said we were going to get you a watch for being on, for however many times you were on. So
we haven't done that yet.
We have not given you your watch. It's coming.
It's in the mail.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So we have Rustin on here. We're going to do a power ranking segment because, you know, this is our thing because we love power ranking things. You can power rank anything.
Anything.
But I thought that, you know, we've had 10 championship teams in the past 10 years for the Big 12. Why don't we power rank those 10 teams? And so the past 2 days, I've kind of talked with several people who've given me their top 10 from the past 10 years. I've put them all together into one comprehensive power ranking. And so we're going to go through those today. If you have any disagreement, let us know on Twitter, Jayhawk Talk or Sherlock Hoops, Rustin Dodd on Twitter as well. So let's just get started here. Just so what we're doing is we're picking each team from the past 10 years and saying who's the best, who's the worst. And I didn't give anybody any criteria. I just said however you want to do it, whether it be just conference, whether it be the whole season, who is the best teams from these championship teams the last 10 years. But we will start off with number 10. So of these 10 teams, this is the last place team, and this is the 2006 team, the 2005-2006 team. This is the Mario was a freshman, Brandon Rush was a freshman, Julian Wright was a freshman. And really, we started out pretty rough. We started out with a loss to K-State early, lost to Mizzou early, but really turned it on, ended up losing to Bradley after a 4 seed in the tournament. But, Kevin, what do you think about the 2006 team? Is it the worst team?
Yeah, it's one of the worst. I think there's some arguments here, but you're looking back at this team and you had, obviously, Christian Moody had to play some. Brandon Rush was there, but he's a freshman. And we're looking at a really good team, but a bunch of freshmen and a bunch of sophomores. I mean, Jeremy Case, CJ Giles are on this team, giving some names from the past. Darnell Jackson, Sasha Khan. So it was, and those guys were all underclassmen. So the only senior on this team was Steven Vincent, Christian Moody, and Jeff Hawkins. So it was a young team and yeah, I mean, of these teams, I mean, they were still pretty good. They won a championship, as you mentioned. And, what'd they finish the year with, like 26-7 or something like that. But, yeah, I think of the 10 teams, I might put them, last. What about you, Rustin?
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. I think this will be a reoccurring theme, but I think the way we look back at teams is a lot dominated by the way, you know, they played in the tournament, and that team struggled in the early, you know, in the early going and lost to Missouri and K-State back to back. And then from then on, they were pretty good. And if you actually look at that team's defensive numbers, they were, even though they were young and they had a lot of freshmen playing, they were like one of the top 5 or 6 best defensive teams in the country. I might be wrong about that, but I think if you look at KenPom, they were right around there. So I think they were still pretty good. But yeah, I mean, if you're comparing them to the other teams, I think 10 maybe is about right.
Let's move on to number nine. And this is the 2009 team. So this is coming off the national championship game. This is when Sharon Collins took over, when Cole Aldridge took over. The Morris twins were freshmen. Brady Morningstar started playing some minutes. You know, we lost to Michigan State in the Sweet 16, ranked number, or had a 3 seed. And, you know, we're up and down throughout the season, but really finished strong. Rustin, tell me about the 2009 team. Is this the right spot for them?
Yeah, I think you could maybe make an argument that the 2009 team and the 2005 team, with the way the 2005 team was playing at the end of the year, maybe. But I think that team was young, and they had Sharon and Cole playing well, but then I think that freshman class was a little bit slow to get going, especially the Morris twins. And if I recall correctly, I think that 2009 season might have been the closest that Kansas came to not winning the Big 12. I mean, I think if Blake Griffin stays healthy and doesn't have that concussion, there's a chance that Oklahoma could have maybe won that conference by a game. Although you never know. I can't remember, did they share it that year? Or I don't even think they did. That sounds about right.
Yeah, you mentioned Oklahoma. That was there was a stretch on that in that game or in that season where we played at Oklahoma, who was ranked number 3, and we crushed them. And I can't remember if Griffin was playing in that game or not.
I don't think he did.
I don't think so either. And so
it was at Oklahoma, but he did not play if I remember correctly.
I think you're right. So we might have got a little lucky there. This was a year that I think a lot of people, this was maybe the first one where most people was like, man, KU doesn't look like they're going to win it this year. And they did. And Bill Self got a ton of accolades for it. He was like Big 12 Coach of the Year and AP Coach of the Year. He won a bunch of awards on this season because I think maybe overachieved a little bit, going 14-2 in the conference. So we're talking about the ninth best team in the stretch, and they went 14-2 in the conference, 25-6 overall. So pretty good year, but ranking against some of the others, I agree. I think 9.
Let's move on to number 8. Of course, number 8, as Rustin previewed a little bit, is the 2005 team. So the 2005 team, a lot of our old favorites, a lot of the hangers-on from the other era, the Roy Williams era. Wayne Simeon was a senior, was an All-American that year. Aaron Miles still around. Keith Lankford still around. And, of course, our buddy J.R. Giddens was a sophomore, shooting threes all year. Started really strong and then kind of struggled down the stretch. And this, of course, is the team that lost to Bucknell in the tournament. 2005 is the number 8 team. What do you think, Kevin? Is that the right spot?
I had this team at 7. I actually had this team one spot up. So pretty close to where we have him here in the composite rankings, but I had them a little higher. You know, they started off great. I don't know what they were at the beginning of the season, but they won like 13 or 14 in a row to start the game or start the year. I don't know if you remember that game at Kentucky. Remember Kentucky was ranked number 8, and we went to Lexington and beat them on CBS in front of a huge crowd. That was a fun game. It was a good year overall, but they really did sputter late, losing 3 in a row in the Big 12 and 4 of 6. And end up losing to Bucknell. So certainly a sour taste late, but I thought this team was maybe a little better than 8. What about you, Rustin?
Yeah, the only thing I will add is, I mean, I think the two things that hurt that team were Keith Lankford was playing injured for most of the second half of the year, and if he's healthy, maybe they look a little bit better. But also, that was the freshman class of Russell Robinson and Khan and Darnell Jackson and then a couple of guys, Galindo and C.J. Giles, that didn't stick around. And I felt like that freshman class, too, was slow to kind of develop. And I think that kind of – I mean, they were basically Aaron Miles, you know, Wayne Simeon, Keith Lankford, and filler. I mean, they just didn't have much else. besides those guys. I mean, they were starting Christian Moody for half the year or parts of the year or maybe most of the year. And you know, Michael Lee was like basically their fifth or sixth best player. You know, it was at the top of the roster, there was a lot of talent, but it was kind of thin as you got down to the towards the bottom.
Let's move on to number seven. And this is where things start to get a little bit different. So number seven, power ranked team among the top 10 teams that have won championships, the 2012 team. I will tell you that this had the highest variance among the votes. Some people had it as high as a third, and some people had it as low as number eight.
That's probably because Ty was involved, and he put Withy's team up at like number one, didn't he?
I'm not going to disclose who the votes were, but yes, that is correct.
Ty is in fake Jeff Withy is who we're talking
about. Yeah, but I mean, there was still some variance even beyond that. So, I mean, this was the team that was led by Thomas Robinson and Tyshawn Taylor. Elijah Johnson was on the team. Relaford, of course, Withy in his junior year. Not a lot of expectations going in, but they made it all the way. I mean, some expectations, but compared to earlier years, not as much. But made it all the way to the national title game, losing to Kentucky. So number seven, think about all the other teams involved. Is this the seventh best team? Rustin, what do you think?
Yeah, I have a hard time maybe kind of discerning between the 2012 team and last year's team. I mean, they seem kind of similar. Last year's team maybe had a little bit more depth. But, I mean, you traded out Thomas Robinson, but you got Ben McLemore. And the thing that sticks out to me, though, the most about the 2012 team and why they may be kind of deserving to be kind of down on the list. I mean, if you remember this, Justin Wesley was essentially like their – I mean, he played minutes. He played actually significant minutes that season on a team that went to the national championship game as a sophomore. And 2 years later, I mean, he can't even – I mean, he's like the, you know, 14th guy on the roster. So the fact that they were – to the point where their bench was essentially Connor Tehan, Kevin Young, and Justin Wesley suggests that, you know, I think that team maybe overachieved more than any other during the last 10 years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I had this team actually in the eight spot. So this is the one that I had on the last one. I think this was a very good team. Obviously, T-Rob was coming on, and I echo everything that Rustin said. You know, there were some interesting games for this team. They lost early to Kentucky and Duke. I'm sure everyone remembers. And then, but overall, the Big 12 slate, you know, was really good. I mean, this team really took care of business in the conference, 16-2. No one was even close. Missouri was the next closest at 14-4, and no one else had more than or less than six losses. So, you know, they definitely took care of business in the conference, ended up number six in the rankings overall. So a pretty good team, but compared to some other ones, I think this is probably about where they deserve.
Okay, let's move on to number six. So this is the closing out the bottom half of the decade of dominance teams. Number six is the 2007 team. That, of course, is the sophomore years of Brandon Rush and Mario Chalmers and Julian Wright, the freshman years of Darrell Arthur, Sharon Collins. This team was a one seed, made it all the way to the Elite Eight, lost to UCLA out west. But definitely one of those banner years for Bill Self in terms of taking a young team and really making him into a contender. You know, it's kind of one of those buzzkills having to play UCLA, a team with a lot of pros, you know, out west. UCLA is the number two. But that's kind of, you know, you could argue without that game, they don't do what they do the next year. So, Rustin, what do you think about the 2007 team being, you know, this is just at the cusp of the bottom half?
You know, this might be the first one I kind of disagree with a little bit. I think probably 2007 team was definitely more talented than the team Kansas had last year. And I think if you look at, like, the defensive numbers, that 2007 team was, if not the best defensive team Kansas has had in the last 10 years, it was second beyond the 2008 team. I mean, there's a lot of future pros on that 2017. And they were young. I mean, they were dominated by sophomores, and they had Sharon Collins and Darrell Arthur as freshmen, but they still had veterans. I mean, Russell Robinson and Sasha Khan were on that team. I think I mean, I think that team is essentially, you know, the national championship team 1 year, you know, younger, and then with Julian Wright, who actually I think maybe kind of the fact that he didn't really have a position kind of was a plus that he left, but that's a kind of a different story. But I think that, I mean, I don't know, I maybe it's just a sign of the teams they've had in the last few years, but I would say this, that team seems like they maybe should be in the top three or four, in my opinion, but you know, what do I know?
Yeah, I'm with you, Rustin. I actually had them up a little higher too. So obviously the rankers don't know what they're talking about other than us.
Who did this ranking?
No kidding. But this is
I made sure that like a bunch of people did it so they couldn't just blame me. Like there's a bunch of people involved here. So these are all aggregated. Kevin, you're part of that aggregation. So you all are right. Partially to blame for this. But I think we're going to see that it's going to get pretty hard when you see these next five teams. Like, okay, who do you switch out? So let's move on to number five. And that, of course, this is beginning. The top half is the 2013 team. And that, of course, is last year led by Mr. Jeffrey Withey, Lesh Johnson, you know, senior-laden team, plus Ben McLemore, guys like Kevin Young, lose to Michigan in the Sweet 16. Of course, we remember this. We don't like to talk about it, but they went 31-6. You know, pretty good team. You know, if they don't lose to Michigan, you don't like to make these thoughts or have these thoughts, but you know they could go pretty far. Kevin, is this the right spot for 2013?
No, I don't think it is. I had this team a little lower, but I think it was still obviously a very good team. Three losses in a row in the middle of the season, kind of sputtered a while, but then you know, fought back, beating K-State and at Oklahoma State to have a chance at the title. Ended up sharing with K-State. Any year we share a title with K-State, I'm just not real into that team. But no, it was a very good team. Obviously a sour taste at the end, because I think you're right. Things actually set up for them and they were playing pretty well late. So kind of a bummer on that front. But I actually had this team a little lower. What about you, Rustin?
No, I think I would kind of feel the same way. And just a couple of quick points. So I will say I was looking back at some numbers earlier today doing some work, and the one thing that stuck out to me that you know, but you just don't, you know, you forget about it, is how good Travis Relaford was last year. I mean, he shot like 60% from the floor. He was, you know, the best defensive player on the team, probably other than Withey. And when you know, him and Withey, I think, are maybe the two guys that got the most out of their ability, maybe of the self era. I mean, those guys turned into, you know, legitimate all league type of players, and, you know, it took them a while. And, but the one thing I will say, though, just not to belabor the point about the 2017, but like the 2017 had Sharon Collins as like the guard off the bench. And it was a freshman Sharon, but he was pretty good. I mean, last year's team had Nadir Tharp as the guard off the bench. So I think if you just stack up players versus players, not even really that close. But all right.
I agree, Rustin. We are 100% in agreement. I don't know who these guys are.
The rankers of authority have a slight disagreement. But, you know, if you disagree out there in podcast land, tell us on Twitter. But let's move on to number four. And this is where things get a little interesting. The number four team is the 2014 team. This could all be just recency bias and that these recent teams are getting ranked higher. But the 2014 team is in this number four spot. Kevin, 2014, is this where we need to be, or is the jury still out on how this team ranks with the other ones?
Well, I think the jury's definitely still out because we got three more games left and don't know how the season will end. But I actually put this team at four. This is where I ranked them, so I agree with the consensus here. I do so only because you know, you stack up the players versus players, kind of like we've been talking about. And when you look at the talent on this team, I am willing to set aside some of the early season losses, obviously a young freshman-laden team. And we've talked about freshman-laden team in some of the other teams here, but this one has a lot different freshmen than those. You know, we've obviously those you talked about the the teams that had Collins as a freshman or Chalmers as a freshman or Wright as a freshman or Rush, those are freshmen that would eventually build into juniors and win titles. This is a freshman team, and it's only going to be freshmen. And I think that they're pretty darn good. And I'm pretty excited to see what happens the rest of the year. And at least for right now, I'm certainly willing to change things once the season ends and hopefully move them even up higher. But I think four makes sense right now. What about you, Reston?
Yeah, I think maybe four or five. You mentioned recency bias. It seems almost like this could like work in their favor because they haven't had March to go out and tear the hearts out of KU fans yet. but they also at the blank slate, you can imagine this team doing something really, really special in that month too. So, I would say that one way or another, this team will probably not be, in the middle of the pack, come by the end of March. I think maybe they'll drop quite a bit or they'll rise a little bit depending on what happens.
We'll just have to see. If you can kind of know what's coming, you can kind of see that other than this 2014 team, all the one seeds are grouped at the top. There's a two seed at number seven. There's a three seeds at 8 and 9 and a four seed at number 10. So kind of depends on what our seed's going to be, but who knows. But let's look at number three, and this is the 2011 team, the Morris Twin years, the Selby year. This was a heartbreaker against VCU in the tournament. Such a good team playing throughout the year, one of the favorites going in. But really a fun team to be around, fun team to watch. I still miss the Morris Twins, especially Tyshawn being around the Morris Twins. But Rustin, what do you think about 2011 being at number three?
This is kind of I don't know how you would say it, but 2011 is, I think, the team that I think I would have number two. I think the natural inclination is to look at 2010 and say, oh, you've got Xavier and Charon and Cole, you've got all these, stars and lottery picks on that team. And then you've also got Marcus Morris and Jeff Withey's like the sixth guy on the bench. And you've got like eight NBA players. I mean, there was a ton of talent on that 2010 team, but for some reason, I think the pieces just fit better in 2011. I think that was a better team. And I think I'm on team Marcus Morris. I'm not sure KU fans remember how good he was that year. I think, and this is my opinion, but I think that was the best offensive year that a player has had under Self. I know people look at Wayne Simmons, raw point totals. He averaged 20 a game or whatnot. But I think Marcus Morris shot something like 57%. I mean, he could score in almost any way he wanted to. He could rebound. He could post guys up. He could shoot threes. I mean, that was maybe his junior year. I mean, it took him a while to get there. But just his looking at his junior year, I think maybe that's the closest Kansas had to a Paul Pierce type player since he was there in his later years, just in that a guy that could score in a lot of different ways. So having said that, I just think that team, it obviously didn't have the total number of talent or the total number of talented players that 2010 had or the NBA guys or whatnot, because a couple of guys had left, but I just thought it fit together in the whole year. It seemed everything just seemed to click better. I mean, they only lost two games until VCU. One of those games was the Texas game, I guess, after Thomas Robinson's mother died. And I mean, I just think that team, to me, is the one team that if you're going to look at a missed opportunity of the Bill Self era, it's that team. That they didn't get to the Final Four one, and that if they would have gotten to the Final Four, hypothetical, the teams they would have played, I think that's the one year you look at and say they really should have gotten it done more than they did.
Yeah, I'm with you, Rustin. I do have this team three, so I agree with the consensus rankings, but it was close for me between 10 and 11. You mentioned Marcus Morris. He was such a stud this year. All Big 12, Big 12 Player of the Year, AP Second Team All-American. I mean, he was just awesome, and I'm with you. What could have been on this team? Because it was a really good one.
Okay, so this is kind of like the part of the beauty pageant where you announce the runner-off, and then by doing that, you give the champion. So we'll announce the runner-up in the KU Big 12 champion power rankings, number two, I think you can probably guess, is the 2010 team. This, of course, is the Sharon is a senior, Cole is a junior, Xavier coming in, Morris twins are there. Got a lot of, Brady Morningstar, CJ Henry, instant offense. Relaford was a younger guy. You know, this was such a good team. Such a good team. Like, I think that this, we can disagree about the 2011 and 10 team, but this may have been our best team outside of the national championship team, and maybe was a better team. But what do you think, Kevin, on the 2010 team? Is this with you in your head regarding where you think they should be?
Yeah, this is where I put them. Sharon Collins was just an absolute beast. First team All-American. Cole was also, I think Cole, for some reason, a lot of fans just forget how good he was too. Maybe it's because he's kind of flamed out a little bit in the pros. I mean, he's still making a paycheck, so he's doing fine. But I mean, he was a second team All-American. He was blocking everything. And that was a really good team. And Xavier, another kind of player that maybe gets not the credit that he deserves, but he was a really good player on that team. Maybe didn't live up to some expectations, but those were unfair because he was pretty darn good. That starting five was awesome. And then you got Tyrell Reed coming off the bench and Markeef coming off the bench and that was a really good team. I agree with the ranking, and it was also a pretty crushing way to lose. You and I were in Las Vegas, and I will never forget the feeling walking through the casinos wearing the KU stuff after Northern Iowa game and everybody seeing us and pointing, and it was so brutal. So what about you, Rustin? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking at, I mentioned this when we were talking about the team the next year, but if you're looking at just raw talent on a college basketball roster, this is, one of maybe the most talented teams in all of college basketball in the last decade. Yeah. The one thing that, it's hard to, it comes across as criticism, but I just think Sharon Collins was better as a junior. I think he was more healthy. I think by senior year, his body was just worn down and he dominated the ball a lot. And I think the team was great. It just, they basically won because they were so much better than everybody. And it just wasn't always pretty. I mean, I may be misremembering a few things, and maybe just the years have made that season not seem as good as it looks in, like the box scores. But it just seems like that team, they never lost, but they just were not, they were not like a super team. It didn't seem like in the moment that they were just, like, to go beyond the decade. I remember the 2002 Kansas team, with that team just seemed to light everybody up. I mean, they were just, that team dominated, and that team had talent too, but it just seemed like the 2010 team, from all the talent they had, I'm looking at some of the scores, like they won by 15, won by 8, won by 12, won by 6, won by 13, won by 9, I mean, won by 2, won by 6. I mean, they beat everybody, but it didn't seem like that team ever really kind of found itself as a basketball team in terms of everything coming together. But maybe I'm not remembering everything perfectly, so I could be wrong.
Yeah, we can just, for perspective's sake, these are all championship teams, so I don't think that anything should come across as criticism. These are all teams with rings, It just so happens that we're ranking them from 1 to 10, and somebody has to be down low. But we are talking about the number two team. But let's jump, of course, to the number one team. Of course, the 2008 team, the national championship year. This was not unanimous. This was nearly unanimous. I believe the 2010 team got one vote for the number one team.
Tiger.
But no, actually, it wasn't.
Oh, never mind. It wouldn't be Tiger.
Oh, yes. No, it was.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It was. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was. So it wasn't unanimous, but I think everybody can kind of see the national championship and automatically think to put them one, but they did tie with Texas, in the Big 12 conference, beat them in the conference tournament. So it wasn't in the, an outright win, but a national championship will go a long way in choosing a team in the power rankings. Are we crazy, Rustin? Is this the right spot?
Yeah, I think so. And I also said maybe we can, like, the subtitle of this podcast could be, I could be wrong. the thing that sticks out about the 2008 team, and I mean, they've got the national championship, but they've got the computer profile to match it. I mean, they were ranked number one in the country in defense. They were ranked number two in the country in offense. I mean, I think Sharon Collins' sophomore year was maybe, you know, he was the sixth man, and I think you can make an argument that he was one of the three best players on that team. I mean, they were deep. They basically had it all. I mean, they could shoot, they could defend, they had post guys that could, you know, muscle people up. They had skilled post players like Darrell Arthur. I mean, they basically had everything you need in a basketball team. And I think they obviously benefit from having been the one team to win the national title. But, you know, I think they're pretty clearly, if you just look at even the statistical analysis, and it would be in my number one too.
Yeah, and you mentioned, Andrew, that they tied with Texas. Texas was really good that year. That was that DJ Augustine year. And I don't think there's a lot to really look down on there. We only had three losses in the Big 12, and those were also the only three losses on the entire season. So it was obviously a really good team, just as Rustin mentioned. I actually did struggle a little bit between this and 2010, so I won't give Ty a bunch of crap. But just because I think when you look up and down the roster, this one, I think it's pretty easy to put first because of the title, and then you see all the pros and you see all, you know, whatever. But it was close for me. But like Rustin mentioned, this team didn't have any holes, including the need for a 6'10 center with red hair. And then we had that covered too. So, I mean, it was a really good team. And obviously with the title, you almost have to default them to number one.
Well, this was fun.
Yeah.
I think we came out with a pretty good ranking. I mean, I think it was good that not everybody agreed on it, but I think that we got a pretty good consensus. You know, a championship will go a long way, but, you know, these are all championship teams. We just chose to put them in some kind of order. If you disagree with us, let us know on Twitter. But thanks, Rustin, for coming on. I think this was a productive discussion, but this may change towards the end of the season with this team we currently have going.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. So you guys have a good rest of the night.
All right, man, you too. We will certainly get that watch in the mail for you.
Okay, I'll be waiting.
All right, later on, buddy.
All right, thanks.
All right, Andrew. Let's bring this thing at least somewhat to a close here. We've got some games this week in the Big 12 that we should probably talk about. I wanted to get some predictions. So we got West Virginia at Iowa State. Who you got there?
Iowa State, easy.
Okay. Baylor at Texas.
This is gonna be tough. I want to watch this game. This is gonna be Baylor's playing well. Texas, you know, still pretty good team. I'm gonna go with Texas stopping the Baylor Bears in their tracks.
Interesting. Baylor needs it more than Texas does. Baylor winning this game is back into discussion of probably being a tournament team. They're probably bubble team right now. Makes it a little more interesting. Iowa State at K-State, another interesting one.
These are games this weekend. This is another good one. I think Iowa State goes in now. I'm going to pick K-State.
I'm going to take Iowa State. I think what you were about to say is
right. Maybe my gut was the right one.
I think what you were about to say is right. Too late now. TCU at West Virginia.
Oh, who cares? West Virginia.
Texas Tech at Baylor.
Baylor.
Baylor could, like you said, man, they could win like seven or eight in a row. Texas at Oklahoma.
This is a good one too. Mm-hmm. I will go with Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think I will too, but that's close. KU at Oklahoma State.
This is going to be a tough game. Of course it is. It's Oklahoma State, you know, even though they're ranked eighth or so in the conference. I think we go in pretty motivated, and we're just a better team. I think KU wins.
Okay. Let's pause here from the Big 12 talk. We'll get back to it in just a little bit. I want to talk about, let's go to the water cooler here.
Water cooler.
This time of year, you're hearing March Madness, you're hearing brackets, you're hearing bubble teams, and you're hearing seeding. So KU now has moved up to number 5 in the AP poll, and I think most fans, KU fans, are looking at that and going, huh, we are starting to get pretty darn close to a potential for a 1 seed. And so we wanted to take a few minutes and see who the competition is for that 1 seed, because as we've seen in numerous statistical analyses, being a 1 seed is a big advantage over a 2 or 3. So, Andrew, I think you and I agree that there are 6 teams here really vying for 1 seeds. That is Florida, Wichita State, Syracuse, Arizona, KU, and Duke. Would you agree?
I think that's right. I think there's a couple others that you could throw in there, but I think that's the core group.
It would need, the others would need a lot to happen.
Right.
And we're talking about team like Michigan State or Louisville, San Diego State, maybe even Creighton. Just like it, but it would have to, there would have
or
to
the
be
Big
some,
Ten winner.
Yeah. There would have to be some really messy things going on. Okay, so those are, well, let's focus on those 6 because those seem to be the most likely. So let's start with Florida since they are currently ranked AP number 1, but we should note when you're sitting there, the committee is behind closed doors at the Radisson or whatever hotel that I think that they should be at. In the conference room there, they don't get to see AP polls. They don't get to see coaches' polls. They don't get to see BPI or whatever the hell ESPN uses. What they look at is RPI, strength of schedule. Certainly the out of conference, the conference record, the last 10 games they've been playing, and then their record versus the top 50, 100 RPI. Key wins and key losses or bad losses. So we wanted to give a little snapshot of each team and then give our predictions right now who we think would be the 1 seed. So, Andrew, do you care how we do this here?
I don't. I can give you Joe Lunardi's bracket odds.
Hey, do that.
Start us off. So Florida, Joe Lunardi has a 75% chance to be a 1 seed. Arizona at a 70% chance. Syracuse at a 60, and Wichita State at 85%. Just to get to us, he has us at a 45. So just in terms of what I think our best shot at getting a 1 is if Syracuse falters. And, you know, they've been playing pretty poorly lately. So if Syracuse falls down the stretch, losing games, especially to Virginia coming up and in the ACC tournament, I think we could sneak up in there if we continue to win. So we've got to win against Oklahoma State this weekend, close it out, and do well in the Big 12 tournament. But what say you, Kevin?
I think Joe is right. Right now, Florida, Arizona, Cuse, and Wichita State are probably the 4 number ones. But let's just talk about this. Like you mentioned, Cuse loses to Virginia, and maybe that will be enough, honestly, for them not to be a 1 seed. Because we're looking at a team with a RPI of number 9, a strength of schedule of 58, only 3 wins against the top 25 RPI. So not a like a really, really good resume. A good resume, certainly because they haven't lost very much. But, you know, 58 in the strength of schedule doesn't really pop off the page like KU would with a number 1 next to it, or a Duke with a number 4 next to it. So that's you know, Cuse is one that has a chance to certainly falter. And then Arizona is 25-2, similar to Cuse, but they too have not looked the same since the loss to Brandon Ashley. And the committee will take into account the way that
injuries are affecting the team. So that's another option. And then obviously if Wichita State loses a game, they won't be a one seed more than likely. Florida seems to be the most likely, just like Joe said. They could probably lose another one and still be considered there at the number one line. I just want to go through a couple of these since I mentioned Cuse, gave you Cuse's little snapshot. Wichita State is 29-0, but their strength of schedule is number 100 right now.
They're 30-0. They won tonight.
Oh, 30-0. Excuse me. So their strength of schedule is 100 with key wins against only one interesting team, SLU at SLU, and they are number 12 in the RPI.
That's St. Louis University.
Correct. So
newbies.
Yeah. So Wichita State, you know, with that 100 next to the strength of schedule, RPI is number 8, but they lose one game. I think that RPI will fall considerably, and I don't think they will be a number 1. Just my thoughts. What about you? If they lose, let's say they make it all the way to the final of the Arch Madness there in St. Louis and lose in the final game, do you think they're still number 1?
I don't think so. I think that if they lose one game, they move down to a 2. I think they know that too. I mean, that's probably a huge motivating factor going in.
Okay, so we mentioned Florida. They are a strength of schedule of 21 and an RPI of number 3. So they have a pretty good strength of schedule, very good RPI numbers. Computers like them. They, of course, beat KU is a nice key win, and they beat Kentucky. So, and Kentucky's a 10 in the RPI, by the way. And so let's move down to KU. As you've probably heard, is 22-6. Their RPI is number 1. Their strength of schedule is number 1. They have played 18 games against the top 50 RPI, which is by far the most of anybody and not close. And that is probably the reason, even though they're 12-6 in those top 50 wins, probably the reason that they will certainly get a look on the one line, even if everybody continues to win of those first 4 teams that we discussed. So, and you know, you've seen something like Jerry Palm said that this is the hardest schedule anyone has played in the last 20 years. Kind of a crazy thing to say. And so KU's record 22-6, you see 6 losses, but that has to be put into perspective. Let's talk about Duke. They are 23-6, similar record to KU, with an RPI of 6 and a strength of schedule of 4. So they have a chance to get there too. What do you think of their chances? It's going to have to take some things.
They're going to have to win the ACC tournament, it looks like, and then get some help. I mean, they're still in the picture.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just let's say, just for the heck of it, that Florida wins out, Wichita State wins out, Cuse loses to Virginia, and then faces Duke in the tournament or in the ACC finals. Zona loses one more game. What do you think the chances of KU being a 1 seed?
If KU wins the Big 12 tournament, I think that they get it.
What if nobody loses and KU wins out, including the tournament? Is it hard to keep KU off that one line?
It's hard to keep him off, but who are you going to take out?
I have a feeling, and obviously we're all speculating because something is going to happen and we're not going to know, but I just think KU is going to end up with a 1 seed here. I think we could lose one more game and still end up with a 1 seed. And maybe I'm crazy, but I think the numbers like us and the strength of schedule and RPI is something that is going to be right in front of all those committee members. Should be interesting. Well, let's move on, Andrew. What do you have to say about Oklahoma State?
I'm going. Okay. I'll have a report from Stillwater. Well, I think so. You'll find out in the next podcast if I do end up going. I think the plan is to go. Haven't been to Gallagher Iba for a game. I've been for a tour, so it'll be exciting to see a game there. Kind of get a bit of a Big 12 flavor for a big game, but you know, just got to stop Marcus Smart.
Yep.
It's always the case.
Go ahead.
Well, we won down there last year. I think we just got to do like we did earlier this year, be tough down low. Andrew Wiggins has to play in this game because he didn't play in the last one.
Right.
But I think that, you know, we've got the better overall talent, better down low. I think we can win.
I think that we'll be motivated because Bill Self did not let them get the trophy out, did not let them talk about celebrating other than having Jarrett's dance a little bit. They want to celebrate. It's always fun to celebrate in someone else's locker room. So there will be some motivation on that front, which is good because we will need it after hopefully avoiding a letdown after two big wins against Texas and Oklahoma. I think we win as well. I think it'll be a close game, a good game, but I'm actually looking forward to this game a lot, maybe more than any game so far this season. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
So let's move on to our Johnny's gift card giveaway. Give us your power ranked top 10 of the last 10 years, 10 championship years, and we will randomly select one. You know what we can do is if people send them in, we can see if it changes any of our aggregate scores. And then we'll post a composite one when everybody sends them in. So we'll take one of those and give the $30 away to Johnny's, our lovely sponsor for this podcast. Many Johnny's locations to watch the away game this weekend in Stillwater.
And March Madness. They will be having specials during the game, so be sure to get out to Johnny's several locations, as Andrew mentioned. For the March Madness, coming pretty quick. Very exciting. Well, Andrew, let's get out of here. Thank you so much for listening. We have crossed the hour line. Thank you to Rustin for coming on and helping us power rank the 10 Big 12 championship teams. Of course, you can find us on Twitter at Jayhawk Talk and at Sherlock Hoops. You can subscribe on iTunes. You get the podcast right away the second it is posted. Please do us a quick favor. Leave us a comment and rating on iTunes. It helps us a bunch. And we will catch you next time, hopefully after an Oklahoma State victory. Number one, no sharing of the title. Number 10, all to ourselves. We'll talk to you next time.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we hold. That was long.
I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks,
this
baby.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing. And look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. Nine times get the cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
I ain't even gotta really say it.
This one for the
fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck J Hawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck J Hawk in your faces.
This for my J Hawk fans, for my J Hawks. This for my J Hawk fans, for my J Hawks. It's for my J-Hawk fans, for my J-Hawks, Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
It's for my J-Hawk fans, for my J-Hawks.